Hello, you're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and are taking the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt. I am a certified career and life coach. And my passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. Earlier this week, I had a conversation with my guest today about how many individuals don't know what their passion is, and they have no idea how to go about finding it. And oftentimes, when I work with my clients, I just remind them or plant the seed that sometimes it's best to just let your passion find you by following a fascination or an interest or a need that needs to be filled. And see where it leads you. It's not always exactly clear right from the very beginning, but with some inspiration, resources, and determination, passion can unfold from there. And honestly, the most exciting opportunities that I see show up in that way. And that is what my guest did. His name is Josh Cooper, and he is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Scoop Digital. His company is guiding the world through digital signage. The idea was created when Josh was a freshman in college, and now he's a recent graduate. His story is genuinely remarkable, and it's imitatable. We're going to go to break, but when we come back, Josh is going to join us and share his story. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to take have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host. I'm Lissa Marquardt, a certified career and life coach. And today, my guest is Josh Cooper. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Scoop Digital. And his company is guiding the world through digital signage. Welcome, Josh. So nice to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, awesome. Well, so just to get kind of our feet wet with what it is that you're doing and how you got there, tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. Scoop is a technology company. We make a digital signage software called Scoop Signage. The mission of the company is to guide the world through digital signage. It's a cloud-based app that's used to remotely control content and information that's displayed on digital screens. So we're responsible for sending pictures, images, videos, data feeds, to screens that you commonly see in places like malls, airports, subway stations, grocery stores, highway billboards that you see up and down the interstates when you're driving, that kind of thing. Anywhere where you see a screen in a commercial setting, there needs to be some type of technology that allows the person who's responsible for controlling that screen to remotely update content, and that's what our app is used to do. And we're powering a couple thousand screens in a variety of venues across North America.
Awesome. Love that. And I think one of the things that is so fascinating about what you're doing right now, and I want to talk to you more about that a little bit later, but is how you got started. I think that is such a great story, and I'm just wondering if you'd be kind enough to share that with us.
Yeah, sure. The initial concept was very different than, you know, the business that we have today.
Right.
About 2 weeks into my freshman year of college, I went to Michigan State University over in East Lansing, Michigan. Very big campus. Really long walk, 2-3 miles to class potentially.
Wow.
And I grew up in suburbia, and I was lucky enough to have a car growing up. And so I could get where I wanted to go pretty seamlessly.
Right.
it wasn't until I moved into my dorm where I really had to figure out how am I going to get across campus affordably and efficiently. Not to date myself, I don't want to sound like a dinosaur here, but I got to school before bird in line scooters existed. And by the time I got to school, you know, Uber was very much in its prime. Surges were at all-time highs. In East Lansing, is not the type of city that has reliable or really adequate public transportation. And so without scooters to rent on a moment's notice and Ubers that I couldn't afford as a broke college kid,
sure,
it really left me with not many options. And so that's where the initial pain point stemmed from, was how do we help students move across this campus for free? And that's when I started to tinker around with different transportation initiatives. And I thought, are there different like transportation companies or systems that I could try and bring to East Lansing so I could get around for free? I come from a digital marketing background. And in high school and in middle school, I was building e-commerce stores for local retail stores.
Very cool.
So I would help them build an online store. And then my job was to use, you know, the Facebook ad suite, the Google ad suite, digital online marketing tools to help drive traffic to those e-commerce stores. So I got very familiar with the idea of these online platforms, dictionary.com, Google, YouTube, et cetera, that don't charge users a fee to access the platform.
Right.
They simply monetize their platforms via digital ad spend. And so my initial thought process was, could we take some type of vehicle and affix digital signage to it, sell sponsored messages to local and national brands, and create a free ride initiative that was, you know, for the people, by the people, funded and supported by local businesses. And by the second semester of my freshman year, we were the first company to successfully offset short distance transportation. And we used a vehicle called a pedicab, like a rickshaw or bike taxi.
Right.
You may have seen them in like New York City or sure. Austin, Texas or something like that. We took three-wheel bike taxis, figured out how to weld and figured out how to slap some flat screen TVs to the back of them. And you know, by junior year, we had a business that was generating a few $100,000 in ad revenue. And we started scaling those fleets to a couple different cities. And soon we were in three states by junior year, moving about 10,000 passengers a month.
Unbelievable. But the thing that is so awesome to me is that, okay, so a need that needed to be filled. I can't believe that there, all these years have gone by at Michigan State and everybody's just like kind of been okay with their ways of getting to and from school. And that all of a sudden it was like, it was something that was planted in your mind that you were going to strategize on figuring it out. So do you remember how, I mean, you explained all the steps in the process, but what was that like to have that idea and then have all those pieces of the puzzle fall into place?
Well, the pieces didn't necessarily fall into place seamlessly.
Right.
A lot of things went wrong. A lot of TVs were broken in the process. a lot of arguing and convincing with the city council and the transportation council.
Sure.
To the point where I actually had to join the transportation council and be the youngest member to ever be on the City of East Lansing's Transportation Council, just to get approval to do this type of thing.
Wow.
I can't truly articulate what happens in an entrepreneur's head when you get the itch.
Yes.
And it's kind of like holding a piece of meat in front of a really hungry dog. It's just instinctual. It's just,
yes.
they're going to leap at it. There's just nothing that you can do to hold them back.
Yep.
And I think, you know, entrepreneurs are similar. When you see your version of, you know, your dog treat dangling in front of your face, you break down walls to get it.
Absolutely true. And I love that when I was looking at your LinkedIn page that you're about said that you're using entrepreneurial fire and innovative technology to change the world. And I love that. And that so sums it up, that entrepreneurial spirit and how, yes. And I always tell my clients that when you find it is what it is that you want to go after, whatever that passion is, there is nothing that's going to get in your way.
Mm-mm.
And
nothing.
And if, yes, TVs will get broken. You will get nose. You'll get slaps on the wrist. And you just find another way up, over, and around to get there.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I do want to mention, though, that burns out after some very limited period of time.
Mm.
If what you're trying to do isn't truly impactful. So for me,
right.
I've tinkered around with a lot of business ideas. And as somebody who's just stimulated by new technology and loves the shiny new thing and
mm-hmm.
is always, you know, my list of business ideas is, you know, pages and pages long. The very first thing that I try and do is try and kill the idea. I really, really try and kill the idea.
So say more about that.
Well, the problem is, like, I would just go and do it. Like, it's just what I know. I guess it's just kind of how I'm wired. Like, I go down these rabbit holes, not necessarily starting the business, but like making the prototype and making the pitch deck and building a financial model to see if the business could be profitable and flow and talking to potential customers. And I you just wake up 3 months later and you're like, what am I doing? Like, I've been working on this like idea and I don't even know if it's going to work. And you know, I'm 5 years into Scoop. Building companies is incredibly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes absolutely every piece of energy that you have. And so I'm always, always, always looking for reasons to kill the idea. I want to find ways that the idea is not going to work. I want to find other people who are already doing it.
Right.
I believe if somebody else is doing it and they're doing a good job at it, there's enough issues in the world, go work on something else.
Sure.
And so for me, if I can't find a way to kill the idea and I can't find a solution that's doing an adequate job and I can't find a reason to not do it, that's usually the green light that says, hey, man, you've got something here. See where you can take it.
That is absolutely brilliant. It really is, because I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and they get so discouraged when things don't just flow as they had visualized from the beginning and there are roadblocks and you know, they or somebody else is doing it. It's very easy to say, you know, well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll just go and do something else. But to start out with that idea that, like, let's see from a different perspective of, is this something that's viable by seeing who else is doing it and you know, how well is it going and what are the obstacles? I think that's a brilliant strategy to approach it from.
I think it's one of the reasons why most startups fail in the first year is because you don't take the time. You think of your shiny new idea.
Right.
You convince yourself that no one else has ever come up with this idea ever.
Right.
And out of 7-8 billion people, you're somehow the first person to ever think of this thing.
Right.
And you start to build it. It's really, really hard. It doesn't go as planned. You're losing time, energy, money. You can't sleep at night. And then you suddenly start Googling and you find 16 other companies that are doing the exact same thing and have way more traction than you. And that's a really bad place to be mentally, physically, emotionally, 6, 7, 8, 9 months later when you've told the world that you're starting this new company and you pitched to investors and you changed your LinkedIn bio and you made logos and you started, you know, when the, what I call like the honeymoon phase is over after 6 to 12 months and it gets really hard, you got to know that the thing that you're trying to do is worth going through eating the mud. You got to know that a world with this product, service, company, whatever you're creating, a world with that thing is infinitely better than a world without it.
Love that.
And if you know that, then it makes it a lot easier to be willing to wake up and go through the mud.
Absolutely true. Anyway, we need to go to break already. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned, and we'll continue with Josh's story. Stay tuned. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and have taken the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host, I'm Lisa Marquardt, and my guest today is Josh Cooper. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Scoop Digital, and his company's mission is to guide the world through digital signage. Before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about entrepreneurial spirit and how it gets in your blood and drives you. And sometimes things don't exactly go the way that you had envisioned in the first place. And Josh, I love that you just said, though, that, you know, it's like, oh, well, so you just basically put it down. And then, so it sounds like you have done that many times. And how is it that you've managed to stick with Scoop, and what about it is different for you that's created the longevity and the success that you have?
I'm committed to the mission. I believe that the technology that we're building, a world with it is better than a world without it.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, my role has really changed in recent years. When you start to hire your first team members and you start to take on investment from outside investors and you start to have paying customers, the responsibilities of your role dramatically change. There's a point, there's an inflection point that some startups, if you're lucky enough to get here, go through, where this stops being an idea and a prototype and it starts being something that customers are relying on. I'm a B2B guy. I think if I had to guess, I don't really have any intentions of building like trendy brands or consumer-facing brands or like little game apps or like fashion things. I just don't know that those are things that the world needs and people have to have in order to drive their business or do the thing that they're trying to do. Don't get me wrong, those things are super important.
Right.
And there's certainly a place for those entrepreneurs. Knowing that businesses are relying on our technology to run their business, knowing that businesses are relying on our tech stack to stay up so that they can generate revenue. Knowing that if our servers go down, this digital screen that's displaying some type of menu board where customers engage with it or interact with it or order food from it, knowing that if we go down, that business's ability to generate revenue is also down. There's an enormous amount of responsibility that comes along with that.
Right.
And we make commitments to our customers that we're going to build reliable technology that's going to create incredible user experiences, and it's going to enhance the customer experience when they come into your store or your venue. So that's where it comes from. We do the work that we do for the viewer. The person who walks into an airport in a foreign country and doesn't speak the language. Just imagine that for a second.
Oh yeah.
You land in some new country and you have no idea where you are.
Right.
Where is baggage claim? Where is the bathroom? How do I get to the Uber?
Exactly.
There's a level of comfort that we provide in our technology is for the viewer. So that's step number one. The second one is my team. The most important thing in my life, aside from my friends and family, is my business. I spend a huge amount of my time on it, which means that the people who have also dedicated their lives and their careers to help build this company, those are the most important people in my life. And I have a commitment to show up every day to get them the resources they need to do their job, to make sure that they're continuing to follow the mission and understand the importance of the technology that we're building and the value it brings for our customers at the end of the day. You know, waking up and knowing that customers rely on our technology and my team relies on me, it doesn't matter what I'm going to face that day. I'm going to get up and I'm going to face it for them.
I can't tell you how much I love everything you just said, because I really believe that the disconnect for so many people out there in the workplace right now is the fact that the importance from the top down is the bottom line. And the pressure mm-hmm. that is created because of that, because of the financial bottom line, the employees and team members and customers don't get to feel that it is for them. There's just not that connection there. It's a very hard environment to work in when you don't realize that what you're doing is of value to others.
Yeah, and I think it's one of, again, that's one of the many reasons why most startups fail in year one.
Right.
Is you get to a point and you're trying to move a mountain, and you're moving barely a millimeter a year, and you hit a wall, and it's like, why am I doing this?
Right.
Does the thing that I'm really trying to do actually matter at the end? Does the world need this thing?
Right.
Is a future with this thing better or worse? And that's why I try and kill my ideas immediately.
Mm.
I don't want to get caught in that situation where I've gone down this rabbit hole and I've expunged just a ton of resources and a ton of energy just to hit a wall and say, wait a second, this thing that I'm building just, the world just doesn't need it, and people don't want it.
Right.
There's a funny thing in kind of that originated in like the Silicon Valley area, where like similar to like how a dog is a 1-to-7 year ratio. So for every human years, a dog is 7 years old,
right.
older.
Mm-hmm.
They call them technical dog years. And they say that, you know, founders and startup founders, you know, it's a 1-to-3 year ratio. You know, you're working as hard in 1 year as you would in 3 years. And to get to a point where you've worked so hard after a year that you've done 3 years of work just to come to the realization that the thing that you're trying to build just isn't a necessity.
Right.
That's a ton of time that you just can't get back.
Right.
So try and kill the idea. And if the idea can't be killed and it keeps coming back, it's a true indication that you might be onto something.
Well, and I know that when we initially spoke, one of the things that you discussed was the fact that there's the whole idea behind knowing when to pivot. So how does that play into that?
Y Combinator does a really good job of simplifying the blueprint to building a startup. And that sentence is almost a fallacy, because there is no blueprint to building your company.
Right.
But there's a couple of things that are just somewhat, I don't want to call them a fact, but like kind of like a startup law, if you will. The hardest thing that a startup is doing is creating something that doesn't yet exist, that people are willing to pay money for. That's an incredibly challenging thing. And it sounds really simple. Most businesses don't do that. The majority of businesses in the world are retail stores, restaurants, grocery stores. They buy it for $5, they sell it for $10. Somebody else is creating the raw materials that go into it. And so one of the other things that Y Combinator mentioned that's just so absolutely fundamental is talk to users. Talk to your customers.
Right.
The person that you think is going to buy the thing that you're about to make, before you make that thing, go talk to that person and ask them if they would buy that thing and pay money for it. And then ask them if they kind of want it or if they need it. And I think that's where pivots stem from, is as you start to have more and more conversations with customers and start to really understand what are your wants and what are your absolute needs. What do you not have in your tech stack today, or what tool do you not have that would just make your life 10x better or 10x easier, or would help you grow your business or would make your job just tremendously easier? When you start to really get into the bottom of what those things are, it helps you better understand what the true problem is. And then it's the entrepreneur's job and the founding team job to create a solution that alleviates that problem or that pain point. I just don't know how you can possibly do that unless you've had that pain point yourself or have talked to dozens and dozens of people that validate that they've also had that pain point, which gives you the green light to go out and build the thing.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and I think that the brilliance in just being willing to pivot is based upon user feedback or input is so crucial. And I know that I have spoken with a lot of entrepreneurs, and there is this fear out there about talking to too many people about their idea because they don't want somebody to steal it. So is that something that you've encountered either with, you know, friends or other colleagues that are involved in startups as well?
I used to be on that wave. Okay. I used to, I hate to admit this. I really, really do.
It's okay.
I really, really hate it. My friends make fun of me all the time for it. When I was a freshman in college, I used to walk around with NDAs in my backpack. And people would know that I was working on this thing. They're like, what are you working on? And I'm grateful that I don't do that anymore. And my advice to people would be, share your idea.
Yes.
I promise you, it is so hard to build this thing.
Yes.
The odds of somebody actually going out and building it are literally next to zero.
Right.
Now, I wouldn't necessarily call up a company that has like the technical wherewithal to do it and convince them to try and do it, because right, they might be able to, but you have to share these ideas.
Yep.
And more specifically, you don't have to share them with people who are going to go out and create it. Share them with the people that you're creating it for, and make sure that they want it and need it.
Absolutely. Yes. And you're right. I mean, that's where you get the information on, you know, which direction do you want to pivot? How do you need to change? Because you have changed so much. I mean, so when I think back 5 years ago, there was digital signage. Mm-hmm. How are you doing it differently? What is allowing you to excel because of what you do differently?
When we opened our third pedicab fleet, I was going into my junior year of college, and I had opened a second fleet before. So my first fleet was in Michigan State's campus, and then I did a fleet in Royal Oak, Michigan, basically Detroit, about 15 minutes outside the city of Detroit. And what I neglected to realize was Royal Oak was a 45-minute drive from me. And so if anything needed to be addressed, I was a hop and a skip away, and I'd be there in less than an hour. It wasn't until I opened up our third fleet in the Jersey Shore in Asbury Park, New Jersey, where I couldn't do that. And the tech stack that we were using to remotely control digital screens on the backs of our bike taxis didn't truly exist at the time. So we were using like thumb drives and flash drives. If an advertiser wanted to buy ad space, I vaguely remember a story where I got an email from a pizza shop owner in the Jersey Shore, and he said, "Hey man, I just saw the bikes roll past my store, and my ad wasn't up there. What's the deal? You owe me my money back." Hmm. And I was in math class at the time.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there like, oh my God, I got to leave this class and call this guy right now. And that's when one of the first light bulbs went off and said, I can't rely on these drivers to swap ads for me. I have to have a reliable way to remotely control this digital screen. And that's when I started calling billboard companies in Michigan and around the Midwest. And after maybe 50, 60 phone calls of saying, hey, how are you remotely controlling your digital billboard on the highway? And getting the answer, you know, dozens of times, which was, hey, if you have a way to remotely control my digital billboard on the highway, give me a call back, because that would be awesome. And I'm like, holy, what? How in the world are you doing this? And they would have on-premise PCs or like a Linux-based computer at the base of the billboard. And the beginning of every month, somebody would drive out there. There were early stage remote controllable, what's called CMSs, content management softwares, which is kind of like the technical term for digital signage software. The ones that existed were wildly expensive, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year per screen. There's no way that our business could afford that. And they were incredibly cumbersome to use. You really had to have a programming background to understand how to manipulate the database, get the files in there, create a schedule, publish the content, get that image to actually fly from your laptop to the screen itself. So that's when I kind of realized, like, I'm the customer. I'm the guy who needs a way to remotely control the screens very easily. That's when I ultimately said, that's the burning pain point.
Right.
That's what I need to do. We have to build this technology to remotely control these screens. Otherwise, our business of providing free rides won't be able to scale.
Right.
And I wanted to open these fleets across the country. And after we started to build it, that's when the demand flew in. And that's when other people with demand to remotely control the screens started asking us if they could buy the technology, if they could license the technology, if they could use the technology. And that's kind of the point at which I said, team, the pedicab business has been fun and all, but we're going to make a pivot and start to be in the business of powering digital screens in any type of venue across the globe.
Awesome. It sounds like the pivot that made all the difference. And we have to go to break again. Can't wait to come back and find out a little bit more about where you're going from here. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who've had the courage and are taking the risks to do work and to live lives they genuinely love. I'm Lisa Marquardt, and my guest today is Josh Cooper. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Scoop Digital. Before we went to break, we were talking about how Josh's company took a big pivot. He found a need that was a little bit more universal in nature with his digital signage, and how that was such a big leap for him. And I totally love your brilliance in being willing to hop on the bus that seems to be able to carry you forward. And with that in mind, I'm curious, what is your vision for your company down the road?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's a couple hot takes that we have and kind of contrarian views that we take at Scoop. And there's really two key ones. So the first one is, we believe that digital signage technology should live in the marketing department, not the IT department. Traditionally, and even still today, big venues like a mall, a convention center, an airport, hospital, if you need to update schedules or wayfinding boards or ads or content on digital screens around a venue, still to this day, marketing is responsible for creating the campaign and creating the digital asset. And it's still their job to send that file over to the IT department so they can program it and put it in some type of software scheduler system that will broadcast that message to the screens throughout the facility. I will mention the industry has done a very good job. Technologies like Scoop and similar technologies are working really hard to make digital signage software very user-friendly so that folks with a little less technical background and knowledge can easily remotely control those screens. So that's nice. That number one. Number two, we believe humans shouldn't be responsible for updating and remotely controlling digital screens.
Nice.
We believe that there is enough POS integrations, API integrations, integrations with various data sets or databases or other sensor-based systems to dynamically update and update screens in real time. So, for example, something like an airport or an FAA arrival and departure system or per airline level, there isn't a human who's sitting there when your gate changes from gate A to gate B. There's an automated system that's passing a packet of data to the digital screen and saying, hey, Delta Flight 39 has moved from this gate to that gate. And so we want more of that in retail stores and restaurants and all these different environments and these venues, manufacturing facilities, hospitals. One of Scoop's biggest niches and our largest competitive advantages, we're very, very good at integrating with these different data sets and these systems so that the folks who run the operations inside of the business don't need to worry about digital signage. You have enough things
yes.
to worry about when you're running your business. Digital signage should flow and update automatically. And that's where we're going is an automated world.
Yes. And the world does need that for sure. No doubt about that.
I certainly hope so.
Yes,
think so.
I think so too. Anyways, Josh, you know, you are so inspirational. I love that you started with all of this started with you finding a need to fill, a way to get across, to get to school without it being too expensive and too time consuming. And this, look where it's led you. So with that in mind, for anybody who's listening who has an idea or is looking to find their passion, what advice would you offer?
If I had to break it down into a formula, I would say try and kill it. If mm-hmm. you can't kill it, you know you're onto something.
Right.
Then talk to the potential customers and really, really, really get to the bottom of whether it's a want or a need. And if it's a need, try and validate the fact that it's a need to the point that they're willing to pay money for it. That's how you know it's a need over a want.
Right.
If somebody's willing to, you know, pay it, sign on to a 2-3-4 year contract, that's when you really start to know that they need this thing to operate their business. And if you've validated those few things, give yourself the green light and go for it and start to really try and surround yourself by others who have done it before. Facebook groups, Slack groups, everything's Googleable. The lonely entrepreneur is a very, very, very real thing.
Absolutely.
And it can put you in a very emotionally dark place. But there's people that have done it before. And if you can learn from their battle wounds and their scar tissue, it can make your journey a little bit smoother.
Absolutely. And there are mentors out there who are willing to share their wisdom and their expertise, and they look forward to doing that. So I always say, be sure to do that and reach out and let people know what your questions are.
100%. 100%. You'd be amazed. A lot of people are out there willing to help, myself included. So
yes.
If I can ever help an entrepreneur, I'd love to.
Oh, I love that, Josh. I was going to ask you. So anyway, if there was someone that wanted to reach out to you, what would be a great way for them to contact you real quickly?
LinkedIn, feel free to go to our website, scoop.digital. Through there, there's various chatbots and contact us forms, and just say, hey, I'm looking to talk with Josh and somebody, or somehow the message will get to me. I'm pretty reachable.
Awesome. So I'm so grateful to have you on the show. It's been such a pleasure. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening in. Stay tuned for my next show. And in the meantime, remember, now is your life. Get out there and really live it.